Welcome into the Rundown on this Friday morning in beautiful Music City, USA. Ryan Porth here in the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, alongside Elijah Campbell, who is behind the glass on the ones and twos this morning as Chase McCabe is on vacation yet again. Well-deserved, but I assume, Elijah, if we were to call up Chase right now, we'd be waking him up. He is on Eastern time right now, but I think we would be waking him up if we called him.
Quite possibly. If we were to call him, I'd give it another hour or two.
Should we call him at like 9:45 and do it live on the air?
Ooh, yeah. Oh, that'd be awesome.
Let's
like put him on the line.
Yes.
Not even tell him he's on.
And see if we get Grumpy Chase to answer the phone.
Grumpy and Hungover Chase will make his radio debut.
Or just Waking Up Chase.
Waking Up, yeah. Waking Up Chase. Yeah, Chase McCabe unfiltered on 102.5 The Game.
We'll have
different side of Chase.
Yes, we'll have to think about that. We have a lot to get to today. Ryan Tannehill and these quarterback rankings that have come out from Chris Sims.
Ooh.
Some interesting stuff from Chris Sims that we're going to get to here in just a little bit. First, I want to start off the show by wishing my amazing fiance, Amanda, a happy birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Amanda.
So it is her birthday, and 8 days from now, we are going to be getting married officially.
8 days?
Yeah.
It's coming up fast.
So next Saturday.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. So some fun times. To update from the start of the show yesterday, we did not get the house that we put an offer on.
I remember, we talked about the offer. It went the way of the MLB's negotiations, didn't it?
We were outbid.
Ooh.
So it's okay. Back to the drawing board. But
hey, keep shooting. Shoot or shoot.
Exactly. Speaking of back to the drawing board, Major League Baseball. Is there really a drawing board for Major League Baseball right now? Because the owners think one thing. The players think another. Rob Manfred and Tony Clark have complete opposite views of how their meeting went earlier this week in Arizona. The owners propose a 60-game season. The players propose a 70-game season. Why can't we just meet in the middle at 65 or 66 games, call it a day, and get on the diamond?
Because that would take some negotiation, and that's not something either of these sides seem to be keen in on doing right now. They're not really interested in negotiating, and we don't even have a drawing board because we tried to have a drawing board this week when the two, Tony Clark and Rob Manfred, met face-to-face, and still nothing got done or even remotely agreed upon. They couldn't even agree upon what actually happened in that room. And if you can't even agree on the facts of what actually happened when you meet face-to-face, I have a hard time believing that I should have any confidence whatsoever that they're going to agree on something as complex as starting a season in the middle of a pandemic. We can't even agree on the number of games. It keeps getting more discouraging every time because we got off the air yesterday on Darren Donick and Chase 2 and saw where the MLBPA had their proposal of 70 games and then baseball still, the owner still wouldn't budge on 60. So if we can't get past that point and it's already June 19th, good luck watching baseball this year.
This has been one black eye of a roller coaster for Major League Baseball. And a lot of people are split on this. Do you blame the players? Do you blame the owners for the predicament that baseball is in? And for me, I'm to the point where I'm blaming both. You guys figure it out. Stop fighting publicly. That's not going to happen. They're going to keep fighting publicly until a deal occurs because they've been doing it for the last 5 weeks.
That's how you do it in 2020. Is if you're going to bicker somebody, you do it publicly so people can grab their popcorn and have a front row seat.
Well said. But ESPN's Tim Kirkchin was on SVP's SportsCenter last night, and Tim Kirkchin actually blames the owners for the spot that the league is in.
And I've sided with the players throughout, but I wasn't there for the meetings, nor were you. But it seems that baseball felt like they had an agreement, and they clearly didn't. So do you get a sense that there's justified anger from ownership side, that there was thought to be something that they had agreed to that they had not?
Yes. Look, I think the owners are more to blame in this situation than the players, much like you feel. However, Rob Manfred left that meeting with Tony Clark thinking 60 games, 100% prorated salary, that's going to be enough. And Rob basically said, look, we can't go to 70 games. I can't go over 60 games. And it wasn't like there was a handshake or an agreement, but he left that room thinking, I think we're going to get this done. And now we're back to they're not going to get this done. And now the distrust on both sides and the anger is there again.
That was Tim Kirkshen last night on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt. Nice to have a different voice on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt other than Jeff Passan.
I'm sure Jeff is tired of doing SportsCenter hits. If there is such thing as being tired of doing SportsCenter hits, it's Jeff because he's been on every night for seemingly the past 6 weeks.
We've had a good view of Jeff Passan's bookshelf for the last 6 weeks.
And his vinyl collection, which, props to him, not only has a Wu-Tang album up there, but Rage Against the Machine's Evil Empire, which I still say is one of the greatest rock and roll albums of all time.
There you go.
Good for him.
So now baseball is left again with the second baseman and the right fielder trying to catch a pop fly in shallow right field. And once again, the ball has been dropped in the middle of the two as they look at each other pointing fingers.
Yeah, and it's almost like if you're like the players are the right fielder and they say, I got it, and they stopped, and the second baseman's just not even listening at all, and they're just running through it, and still the ball is not being caught. Like, the players are saying, tell us when and where, and it looks bad on them, too, because the owners, I mean, technically told them.
They told them when.
And they still didn't get anything done. So it's a little more complex than when and where. So that aspect of this whole negotiation thing has kind of annoyed me to that point because it's a little more simpler than tell us when and where. Even though I'm on the player's side right here, I think for me, divvying up the blame here goes about 70-30, owners at 70, players at 30. Because the players could have helped their cause by being like, okay, fine, we'll take 65. I mean, at this point, you just got to be playing games. And I understand, you know, as an MLB player, your earning window for your average player is only like 4 or 5 years. You have such a small window to make the maximum amount of money you can make in your career. Why would you burn a season, especially if you can get hurt next year, tear an ACL or whatever, and then never have that earning power ever again? So I totally understand that when these owners can own these teams for decades at a time, like 20, 30 years. The Cardinals have been owned by the same ownership group for how long now? And they're still trying to tell people that baseball's not a profitable business and they made $2 billion last year? We're getting fed BS from both lines here at times, but I think the owners mostly have the least to lose from this. The players have a lot to lose from not having a season and from having a shorter season than what they wanted. They have more to lose because the owners are the ones, at the end of the day, who are the billionaires with a B.
Think of what this could mean for Mookie Betts, Nashville native.
Yeah.
A free agent at the end of this season. Mm-hmm. If there are no games played, that is going to drastically affect the amount of money that he can earn in the offseason.
Yeah.
Whereas if you at least complete a portion of the regular season and the postseason, then his earnings are probably going to go up, especially if in Marquise Munson's Dodgers uniform, Mookie Betts goes buku and helps the Dodgers mm-hmm. win a World Series, then Mookie Betts is at least going to earn most of what he had expected to earn in free agency. But Mookie Betts has been hell-bent to get to free agency. He turned down Red Sox offers because mm-hmm. he wanted to be in free agency. And now, for players like him and others that we're expecting big, huge monster paydays. Mm-hmm. It may not be as monstrous as once thought if you don't play a 2020 season.
Which, believe it or not, they are entitled to. If you're like Mookie Betts' skill set is one of which he is one of three or four guys on planet Earth that have that. He is worth all of that money. And it would be unfortunate for him if, say, something were to happen where they don't play a full season or they don't play a season at all this year, gets hurt in the offseason, and his asking price goes down by tens or in some instances hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, that could be what's at stake for guys like Mookie Betts. If he goes full Andrew McCutchen and gets hurt and his value just plummets over the course of a year, this could have been a very valuable year for him to make the money that he's definitely entitled to, because like we said, he's one of like three or four guys on the planet that can do what Mookie Betts does.
Absolutely. Well, you could write a book on the 2020 labor dispute between the owners and the players, and we'll see if today another chapter is written in that book.
It's only been 6 weeks, man. It's only been 6 weeks, and you can write an entire book series on how atrociously this has gone.
Quick yes or no. With the 60-game proposal, it was supposed to start July 19th, 1 month from today.
Yeah.
Quick yes or no. Does that happen?
No.
Baseball on July 19th.
Absolutely not. I think we're still having this discussion in a week and a half, 2 weeks. And if we're still having a discussion then, we're definitely talking about if we're having a season at all.
I would tend to agree with you. unfortunately.
Sad.
So moving to the NFL, we're going to move on from Major League Baseball, at least for the time being. In the NFL, a star player has requested a trade, and that star player is Jets safety Jamal Adams. And the relationship between Jamal Adams and the New York Jets has not been great in the last handful of months slash years, and it has deteriorated to a point where Adams has now requested a trade. And Rich Cimini covers the New York Jets for ESPN, and he says this is not a surprise.
How do we get to this part of the story where it feels like we're at a bit of an impasse?
Yeah, you know, sometimes, Scott, and you know this from being around the NFL, some events in the NFL truly surprise you. This was not one of those events.
Right.
You could see this coming from last October when the Jets entertained offers at the trade deadline. It really, I think, created a kind of a chasm between the player and management, and I don't think it ever went away, and it just came to a head on Thursday with Jamal formally requesting the trade. And I think both sides are pretty dug in. I don't think the Jets want to trade him. I don't think their stance has changed by today's developments. And I think Jamal is a strong guy. He's a strong man of his convictions. And I just feel he thinks he's really been slighted by the Jets, and he wants to be paid big, big money.
That was Rich Cimini of ESPN covering the New York Jets. That was Rich Cimini with Scott Van Pelt last night on SportsCenter. Now, ESPN's Adam Schefter, when he tweeted out that Jamal Adams has requested a trade, he also tweeted out the likely destinations that Jamal Adams would accept a trade to, which are the Baltimore Ravens, the Dallas Cowboys, the Houston Texans, the Kansas City Chiefs, Philadelphia Eagles, San Francisco 49ers, and Seattle Seahawks. Elijah, if you had to pick one of those seven, which one does Jamal Adams end up on if he is traded from the Jets?
The Cowboys look like an enticing destination for him because the Cowboys are about a piece away from being a legitimate Super Bowl contender. I actually think they're a Super Bowl contender right now on June 19th, 2020, just because of how talented their offense is and the fact that their defense did kind of bail them out at times last year.
It's solid.
In some games, it's solid.
It's not a great defense, but it's solid. But if you add Jamal Adams to that defense,
then you solidify your pass defense. They lost their best corner. And so they would need to add another piece to their secondary to go with their offense, which was really good last year, and added CeeDee Lamb. So if you're Jamal Adams, you wouldn't be upset if Jerry Jones made that call to swoop in and save you from the dumpster fire that is the New York Jets. I do think it is funny, though, all seven teams that he asked to play for, minus the Houston Texans, are teams that are just legitimately good right now already. Like, obviously, you want to play for those teams, but... Yeah, I mean, if I had to pick any of those right now, I would love to see him in a Dallas Cowboys uniform just because that would make them my Super Bowl pick if we were to pick right now.
Wow. I think he's going to end up in the NFC East, either with the Cowboys or the Eagles.
Oh, it wouldn't be fair to put him on the Eagles.
Oh, man. But
that defense is already good up front.
I know.
As good as it gets in the league. Oh,
that would make the NFC East a really fun race because right now I would agree with you that the Cowboys are probably the favorite. In the NFC East. But if the Eagles get Jamal Adams, I think that shrinks the gap just a little bit between the Cowboys and the Eagles. You mentioned the Houston Texans. Mm-hmm. Coming up next, what would Bill O'Brien give up for Jamal Adams? We'll get to that coming up next here on The Rundown. I'm Ryan Porth. He's Elijah Campbell behind the glass. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is The Rundown. Ryan Porth in studio this morning alongside Elijah Campbell behind the glass. Chase McCabe is on vacation both yesterday and today. We'll be back in the saddle Monday morning with probably more reaction to more rejected offers between Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association. But before the break, Elijah, I asked the question, what would the Houston Texans, specifically Bill O'Brien, give up to get Jamal Adams? Jamal Adams, the star safety for the New York Jets, requested a trade yesterday. And we know Bill O'Brien's trade history has not been great. And the Texans were listed as one of the destinations that Jamal Adams would accept a trade to. So I ask, in your mind, how far would Bill O'Brien go to acquire Jamal Adams?
I mean, with the unpredictability that he's kind of shown in terms of his general management moves. He can give up Deshaun Watson for all we know.
I was going to say.
That's right.
I mean, the Jets want to get two first-round picks for Jamal Adams.
Man.
Which I don't know why you would give up two first-round picks for a safety in 2020.
Yeah, absolutely not.
He's very good.
Well, yeah.
He's very talented.
Ain't two first-round picks.
But good. Two first-round picks, get out of here. I'm not giving up two first-round picks for a safety.
Maybe they just know their audience, and they know that if anyone's going to do it.
But it is Bill O'Brien.
It's Bill O'Brien.
And they could use some help on defense. Now, mm-hmm. I could see Bill O'Brien sacrificing like the next two drafts with like six draft picks that he gives up. Maybe it's not for two first-round picks, but he gives mm-hmm. up a first, 2 seconds, a couple thirds, and just makes himself look even worse just to go out and get Jamal Adams.
We'll have a haul. I mean, like, I can understand maybe a couple draft picks, nothing before, you know, the third round, a second maybe. But with Bill O'Brien's history, like we said, I mean, he already traded away the guy with the most trade value on his team for David Johnson, a running back who is worth almost more than any other running back in the league, who has been on the field as less than almost any running back in the league as well. So crawling into Bill O'Brien's head right now is one of the most impossible things to do in the NFL and try to understand where he's coming from. The Texans, in terms of trade value right now, I mean, there's not a lot on the defensive side of the ball. And on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, you got a decent haul of wide receivers, but you need that haul to make up for the loss of DeAndre Hopkins. Like, you're going to need Randall Cobb. You're going to need Will Fuller, Kenny Stills. You're going to need everybody that you have on that team right now to make up for that loss offensively and give Deshaun Watson as much help as you can. And you can't really give up a lot of draft picks either, because they haven't taken care of the offensive line to protect Deshaun Watson anyway, who's now their most valuable asset.
You brought up Deshaun Watson as a joke, tongue-in-cheek, that the Texans would trade Deshaun Watson for Jamal Adams.
He has the most trade value.
Nothing would surprise me
if he gave up
with
Deshaun
Bill O'Brien.
Watson. A Sam Darnold, Deshaun Watson swap?
Oh, my gosh. If the Texans traded Deshaun Watson and a first-round pick to the Jets for Sam Darnold and Jamal Adams...
If you're a Texans fan, you boycott the season.
I mean, there's already probably going to be a limited number of fans, if any, mm-hmm. in stadiums for the NFL this year.
Yeah.
There would be none of them in
Houston.
A ghost town
in Houston just because Bill O'Brien couldn't get out of his own way.
100%. So it'll be interesting to see how all of that plays out with Jamal Adams and the New York Jets. Before we get to Chris Sims' quarterback list, Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com last night did reveal that the Browns' offer to Jadeveon Clowney was the best multi-year offer that Clowney has received in free agency, and it was estimated to be somewhere in the range of $12 million a year, and Clowney turned it down.
And that's the most he's been offered.
Apparently, according to Mary Kay Cabot, it is the best offer that he's gotten.
That's a pretty reliable source right there, too. So I would believe that he might be offered $12 million a year at most, even though he's kind of in the range for what he was looking for 2021, $21 million. And to me, using some of these context clues here, his injury concerns are probably a little worse than maybe what some teams might think. They're either worse or teams are sketched out that they can't have him in the building too. So that's a little bit of a red flag on the Clowney front there.
So if that is the best multi-year offer that Clowney has received in free agency, that probably tells me the Titans are only going to sign Clowney if it's a one-year deal.
Mm-hmm. If it's a one-year deal and they can get him at, I mean, you can do a one-year at $10
million. I've been pretty vocal that I would not go over $13 million on a multi-year deal for Jadeveon Clowney. Mm-hmm. If it was a one-year deal, I would be okay with it being 1 year, $14
million. Oh, yeah.
$14 million for Jadeveon Clowney mm-hmm. in what would be a prove-it deal for Jadeveon Clowney. You know that whatever version of Clowney you'd be getting, in all likelihood, would probably be the best version of Jadeveon Clowney. You maximize those 16 regular season games plus postseason, and you let him walk in free agency next year to go get his money if he goes crazy.
Yeah, and your window for winning for the Titans is honestly right now. You had the run to the AFC Championship game. You're trying to recreate this lightning in a bottle experience that you had in the last 8 or 9 weeks of last season. and you have an offense you're confident in, an offense that was one of the best in football the last half of the season, a defense that you've they've tweaked a little bit, but I mean, there were some necessary tweaks, and you make the Jarrell Casey move to be able to make a go-for-it move like having Clowney for a year just so you can maybe squeeze one more championship season or caliber season into this very tight window, which in the NFL, it can change dramatically over the course of even 1 year. So when you have a little bit of a window like the Titans do, why not go for it by maybe signing him for 1 year, $11, $12 million, and if he has a good enough season, let him walk and test the market on his own.
So, Jadeveon Clowney, hopefully he ends up in a Titans uniform at a reasonable price. Now, speaking of reasonable, I don't know if you could call Chris Sims' top 40 quarterback list reasonable. His top 40 list annually is always a little bit, kind of a little bit fishy, mm-hmm. right?
He's not afraid of controversy.
He isn't, and to his credit, Chris Sims of NBC Sports and former quarterback, he is not afraid to share his opinions, and his opinion of the top 40 quarterbacks in the National Football League, I look at this list up until Ryan Tannehill at 11, because that's all that has been revealed on Twitter so far. And I'm sitting here scratching my head at the listing that he has put together, where at 15, he has Tom Brady. At 16, he has Drew Brees.
That's a crime. The most accurate passer in football. Even last year, who's one of the most accurate passers in football, not named Ryan Tannehill.
He has Ben Roethlisberger at 14.
A guy who played like 30 minutes and is of a season last year.
And is a walking injury waiting to happen.
Yeah.
So how would...
Josh Allen ahead of Derek Carr?
I do not understand the reasoning behind Ben Roethlisberger being ahead of Brady and Brees. I don't understand that. Mm-hmm. I don't understand Philip Rivers being ranked ahead of Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, I'm not even that high on Jimmy Garoppolo.
Me neither.
But he's a good enough game manager to obviously get you to a Super Bowl, and he's not a terrible risk taker. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo is a solid quarterback. Josh Allen, in my opinion, when he's forced to throw the ball, is a bad quarterback.
I know. And Rivers is at 17, Josh Allen 18, Derek Carr 19, and Jimmy G's at 20. And
that's
then
atrocious.
You have Baker Mayfield at 21.
And I think the Baker Mayfield thing might be sick because he was pretty rough last year at times. I think he'll be a little better this year. He can bounce
I
back.
Agree.
I think we've seen the floor of Baker Mayfield. It's just him maybe trying to fill out his potential. But Kirk Cousins at 13 to me is a little wild too, because Kirk Cousins, I think, redeemed himself at the back end of last year after having a little bit of a rough start. I mean, NFL Next Gen has him as a top 5-6 guy in passing under pressure. He's top 5 or 6. I think he's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, and he's finally proven that he can win some big games. I don't care about winning on Monday Night Football games. That doesn't mean what it used to, I guess, a decade ago. But I mean, you saw what he can do when he made two of the best throws of the entire NFL season in the Superdome, in the playoffs, in a hostile environment to win a game that team had no business winning.
Mm-hmm.
And you're gonna tell me he's only the 13th best quarterback in the NFL?
Well,
I have a hard time believing that.
Here's where I do have an issue with a true issue, is that Chris Sims has also ranked Cam Newton ahead of Ryan Tannehill.
Is it a given that Cam Newton's going to be in his top 10?
It isn't. He did confirm that he is in the top 10.
Oof.
I mean, the top 10 is going to look like, Patrick Mahomes,
mm-hmm.
Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers,
Lamar Jackson,
Deshaun Watson, Dak,
mm-hmm. Carson Wentz.
Probably Matthew Stafford. Stafford's
Matt
not
Ryan.
On
the,
Matt Ryan. They aren't on this list yet. And then Cam Newton.
I want to hear his justification for that, because it's like the Ben Roethlisberger thing. He played a game or two last year, and in those games wasn't very good at all. Cam, his injuries, I think, have really been kind of the downfall of his career. And I love Cam Newton. I love watching Cam Newton. And about 5 years ago, you could say he was in the top 3 or 4 quarterbacks in the NFL, but his body has taken such a beating since then. And he hasn't been as accurate as he was. He can't stay on the field. And sometimes availability is your best ability. And that's my biggest thing with Carson Wentz, too. I'd love to say Carson Wentz is a top 10 quarterback. And in terms of talent, he is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. But when you're missing games every year, especially the biggest games, because you play a little reckless and your body just takes a beating, then what good are you if you're on the bench, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, Cam Newton, and this is why I cannot believe Chris Sims has Cam Newton in the top 10, because Cam Newton, in the last 4 years, is a 500 quarterback. And the last 4 years are since he was MVP, took the Panthers to the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. and then he was too scared to go after a fumble in the Super Bowl, and took a lot of heat. He mm-hmm. didn't want to talk to the media after that loss. It's funny how Cam Newton wants all the spotlight after wins, but wants nothing to do with the spotlight after losses. Not a true leader there. And Cam Newton, 500 quarterback, under 60% completion as a mm-hmm. as a passer in the last 4 years combined. We're not just going off one season.
Right. It's been a rough go since that MVP year.
His last 47 games, he is a 500 quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Newton is not that good. So these rankings that Chris Sims has are just completely out of whack.
And the Panthers' offense last year, in the last half of the season, when they just totally stopped playing football for 8 weeks, was absolutely atrocious. And a lot of that for Cam Newton, too, I think it has to be with the reoccurring injuries that he's getting all the time. He's been battling injuries, and a lot of that was his style of play, because he was kind of fearless whenever he rolls outside the pocket and was never afraid to take hits. But Cam Newton's not a top 10 quarterback right now in the league. Last year, so 2018, you had a full 16-game sample size that, if you want to say, well, we didn't see what he was about last year, the closest 16-game sample size you have of Cam Newton was him getting off to a hot start and that offense completely falling apart and just failing to be able to move the ball in some of their biggest games of the season. Maybe a change of scenery and maybe a new change of offensive philosophy would help Cam Newton a lot, but right now, it would take that to even get him in the top 20 category for me.
So where do we think Ryan Tannehill should be ranked in Chris Sims' quarterback rankings? We'll get to that next. Plus, if you're sold on Tannehill, why are you sold on him? And if you aren't sold, why aren't you? That's all coming up next. This is The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Ryan Porth, alongside Elijah Campbell, who is kicking it behind the glass today on the ones and twos. Last segment, we reacted to Chris Sims' top 40 quarterback countdown. Chris Sims of NBC Sports, former NFL quarterback and star at University of Texas back in the day.
He was really good at Texas. Unfortunate what happened to him in his NFL career. I will give him that.
So Chris Sims has Ryan Tannehill at 11. He also has Cam Newton in his top 10. He also has Tom Brady at 15 and Drew Brees at 16. His rankings are completely out of whack. I don't really understand the method to his madness also of ranking Phillip Rivers ahead of Jimmy G or Baker Mayfield, but you do you, bro. So Ryan Tannehill came in at 11, which, not necessarily surprised given the unbelievable season that he had last year with the Titans, the fact that he was the highest rated quarterback in the entire league. He put the team on his back and carried them not only to the playoffs, but then was under center for the Titans in the AFC Championship. He didn't carry them to the AFC Championship because Derrick Henry carried the Titans to the AFC Championship after wins against the Patriots and the Ravens. But Tannehill at 11, how do we feel about that? Do we feel like Tannehill is that he should be considered a top 10 quarterback in the league after last year? Is he ranked appropriately? Is he ranked too high? In your mind, Elijah, how do you see Tannehill in the NFL and where Sims ranked him?
I think Sims put him a little too low. I mean, and we're talking by a span of a couple like spots. I think Ryan Tannehill's a top 10 guy. 8, 9, 10, I think, is an adequate spot. He deserves the top 10 spot not because he carried the Titans to the AFC Championship game, because that offense is, at the end of the day, predicated on what they do in the running game. What Ryan Tannehill did last year was save their season, because the offense got dramatically better from the time that Marcus Mariota was out and Ryan Tannehill was inserted as the starter. that opened things up for Derrick Henry. That made life easier for Derrick Henry, and that honestly opened up a lot of success for him because teams had to respect the play action game because he is such a good downfield passer. He's one of the best downfield passers in the NFL, and last year he was number one in the league when under pressure. And when he was under pressure, his average air yards was well over 10 yards, and he's the only quarterback since 2016 to have that type of metric where he's throwing at least over 10 air yards even when he's under pressure. So he can sling it. He's also a reasonable risk taker, and just he minimized a lot of the mistakes he made that Marcus Mariota was making, and that alone was the difference between the team being 2-4 and being a game away from staring the offseason in the face to them being able to be in a position to make the amazing playoff run that they did. So because of that alone, the value that Ryan Tannehill holds to this offense, he's a top 10 quarterback, even though some of the raw counting stats like passing yards or passing attempts might not be up to snuff to even someone like a Phillip Rivers. As accurate as he is, and the effect he has on his offense is valuable enough to make him a top 10 guy.
So we both agree he's, I think most of us would agree, he's better than Cam Newton.
Mm-hmm. I take Tannehill over Cam Newton.
We would take Tannehill over Cam Newton easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no brainer.
Would you take Tannehill over Matt Ryan?
Ooh. Probably not. And it also depends on the offense, too. Matt Ryan's skill set might be a little underutilized if he was in Tennessee right now. Ryan Tannehill and this Titans offense just go hand in hand. It's perfect. It's peanut butter and jelly right now.
Spaghetti because, and meatballs.
Yeah. The Titans need someone who can be a little bit of a game manager, which, as I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times, game manager should not be treated as a bad word in the NFL when it comes to quarterbacks because you need guys like that. Ryan Tannehill can move the ball when needs to. He's perfect and at his best in play action, which is perfect when you have a running back like Derrick Henry in your backfield. There's not a lot of quarterbacks that would fit this offense or have the desire to fit this offense. I'd be cool with only throwing the ball 15 times a game in a playoff game in Foxborough when Tom Brady's on the other offense. I just think it's a perfect match. Is Matt Ryan a better quarterback right now? Probably. But I guess Ryan Tannehill's fit on this Titans team makes him more valuable. And you can say that if Ryan Tannehill's anywhere else, he isn't a top 10 quarterback.
Would you take Ryan Tannehill over Matthew Stafford?
Oh, that's tough, too. I'm a big Matthew Stafford guy. Matthew Stafford.
Why?
And Kirk Cousins. I feel like his front office in Detroit has really done him no favors, and it's not his fault Calvin Johnson kind of bailed after a couple of years of Matthew Stafford being in the league. He did have arguably one of the greatest wide receivers we have ever seen, probably the greatest receiver I've ever seen, not named Randy Moss or Jerry Rice. Bailed early in his career, and the offenses or the GM has given him offensive gifts like Javid Best in NFL drafts. Amir Abdullah. Like Golden Tate. Like, love Golden Tate, but I mean, that's not really the type of weapon that a lot of other quarterbacks have. And he's kind of had an underserved offense, and he, as good as he is, is the reason that offense is any kind of productive year in and year out.
So, let's go through the list of quarterbacks that we are sold are head above shoulders better than Ryan Tannehill.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Mahomes.
For sure.
Russell Wilson.
Yep. No.
Aaron Rodgers. Lamar Jackson.
Yep. Easily.
Deshaun Watson,
yeah.
Okay.
Say Deshaun Watson.
For me, those are like the top five.
Yeah.
In my mind, currently in the NFL, Mahomes, Wilson, Rodgers, Jackson, and Watson are the top five quarterbacks in the league.
That's fair.
Okay.
I'd be tempted to put Dak up there, too.
All right. Would you take Dak over Ryan Tannehill? Do you think he's...
Yeah.
Do you think he's definitively better than Ryan Tannehill?
I think so.
What about Carson Wentz?
No, because Carson Wentz's health is a big, big factor. And Carson Wentz could. I just need to see a full 16 games from Carson Wentz. And if you can't give me that at the bare minimum, then it's going to be hard to replace someone who's at least as reliable as Ryan Tannehill
is. So you think Matt Ryan is the better quarterback than Ryan? Than...
Yeah,
you think Ryan is better than Tannehill?
I think I'd give Ryan over Tannehill, yeah, in that department. And that one's close. That one's the closest of all the ones we've named so far. Him and Stafford
But you can't definitively say mm-hmm. that Matt Ryan is better than Ryan Tannehill, right? Like, you think he's better, but it's not definitive.
It's not definitive. I would have to think about it.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'm not going to put Matt Ryan on that list. So we have six quarterbacks so far.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anybody else that you would add to that list of Mahomes, Wilson, Rodgers, Jackson, Watson, and Dak?
I'd even say Breeze at this point in time,
okay,
too.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll give you that. Drew Breeze. What about Brady?
No, I think Daniel's a better option than Brady. Even when it was the during the offseason when there was the Tom Brady to Titans talk or the rumors that were kind of floating out there, I thought it would have been a mistake to go for Tom Brady because of what you have in Tannehill right now.
What would – all right, you're a big Kirk Cousins guy. Do you think Kirk Cousins is definitively better than Ryan Tannehill?
Not definitively, but I think he is better.
Okay, all right.
Like he is better, but it is not like
I disagree.
A no-brainer.
I disagree.
I'm a Kirk Cousins truther.
So are you sold on Ryan Tannehill?
Oh, for sure, especially for this team.
All right, why are you sold on Ryan Tannehill being the Titans quarterback, not only from last year and now in 2020, but beyond?
Because the way this offense is constructed right now, if you're going to have an offense predicated on the running game, you have to have a quarterback who's at his best in play action and throwing downfield to open the top up off of defenses because you're going to face a lot of stacked boxes. And the Titans face that almost more than any team because of Derrick Henry's presence. So because of that, he was at his best when he's throwing downfield or when the pocket's collapsing a little bit. You saw that in the Colts game, that bomb to Khalif Raymond. Almost won them that game because that was a neck-and-neck game until a blocked field goal and that bomb kind of separated them a little bit, and that was a turning point in the season. In the Ravens game, he was able to take the top off of defenses because the Ravens were playing in and trying to contain Derrick Henry. So you need guys who are at their best, who aren't going to be huge risk takers, who are cool with throwing the ball maybe 15 to 20 times a game and not throwing it 45 to 50 like a lot of modern NFL offenses do. And a guy who has a good rapport with your best weapons, like A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, Adam Humphries.
He also has a good rapport with Arthur Smith.
And Arthur Smith,
and that might be the most important one.
Exactly. And the thing with Ryan Tannehill is, too, is you've seen what Ryan Tannehill is in an offense that asks him to throw the ball 35, 40, 45 times a game. Those offenses weren't the best in the NFL in Miami. They struggled, and Ryan Tannehill struggled. But coming into a situation like the Titans, he is utilized to the best of his abilities. The offense isn't catered to him, but he caters to the offense better than a lot of quarterbacks in 2020 could. I think that fit alone is why that his contract is a reasonable one. It's a lot of money. It's a ton of money. But you pay that kind of money to have that kind of fit, even though he's not going to put up a ridiculous amount of like counting stats in terms of yards or touchdowns.
I'm sold on Ryan Tannehill, too, because of the system and the weapon and the pieces he's surrounded by and just how well he fits with Derrick Henry, with A.J. Brown, with Jonnu, with Arthur Smith, all of the above. Now, if someone weren't sold on Ryan Tannehill, why would they not be sold, in our opinion? Is it because of what he did in Miami and they're still not sold that last year – you know, wasn't just a fluke?
Yeah, or sustainable. Because it's a fair question to ask. Because his production last year, I mean, given his track record throughout his career, isn't sustainable. And I think we can accept that. You can accept that you won't have the season he did last year, but you can accept that he still fits to the point where he doesn't have to have a 112 passer rating to make this team better. He's just got to do his job, and he is a good enough quarterback alone that even if he does regress slightly, he's still the perfect fit for this offense in terms of attitude, his willingness to play that role, and the rapport he's got with his receivers right now, and with Jonnu Smith, his pass catchers. So I still think the fits well, even though he's not going to completely replicate it in terms of being like the most accurate passer in football. That is going to regress a little bit, but you can take some regression and him still be a valuable commodity.
I mean, if he doesn't regress, this team is going to win at least 11 games.
Oh, for sure. If he doesn't regress and like this turns out just to be what Ryan Tannehill is, he's a perennial all-pro quarterback for the next 5 years or so until he eventually does start to regress to the point where he's not that anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's at least the amount, you know, the length of his contract.
Coming up next, there were a couple virtual championships last night on Twitch/Twitter/Facebook, what have you. We're going to try to explain why this has become a pretty big deal on social media here in the last month or two. That's all coming up next. Elijah Campbell behind the glass. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to The Rundown on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth alongside Elijah Campbell this morning here in the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Darren Donick and Chase featuring yours truly, Elijah, and Marquise Munson is coming up at 10 as all three of them, the stars aligned for all three of them to not be a part of the show today, and they are all off today with their different schedules. So it will be the three of us.
I feel like we're scab players in the NFL in 84. That's what it feels like right now. Yeah, we're the replacement players.
We're the replacements?
Oh, yeah. Oh, which one of us is Keanu Reeves? Who's going to call that?
I don't know.
Looks-wise, I got the hair for it, so I can claim Keanu today.
We'll need to have this debate with Marquise Munson coming up here in just a little bit, as that's coming up at 10. But tease before the break that there were some virtual championships last night on Twitch that were a pretty big deal on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, the Nashville Predators won the virtual Stanley Cup against the Philadelphia Flyers in Game 6.
We did it.
And
we did it.
So the Nashville Predators sent out a tweet saying, send us your virtual cellies, which if you're listening and you don't know what a celly is short for celebration. So someone tweeted back a video of them watching the Predators win the Stanley Cup on either a projector screen or a massive TV in their bonus room with red goal lights going off with All I Do Is Win from DJ Khaled.
That's an incredible setup they have there.
It was amazing. But like so many people were like glued to this virtual Stanley Cup playoff for the Nashville Predators that not only was on Twitch, but also the Stanley Cup final was on Fox Sports Tennessee with Willie and C-Mace on the call for the Nashville Predators winning the Stanley Cup in NHL 20. And then you have Coach Duggs, which if you don't know Coach Duggs, first of all, you haven't been on Twitter in the last month. Mm-hmm. Second of all, Coach Duggs is this fake coach that Big Cat for Barstool, Dan Katz, has created to go around to different schools on NCAA Football 14 every single season within his not franchise. What do they call it?
Oh,
what
mode Dynasty is it? Mode.
Dynasty
yeah,
mode.
Dynasty mode.
Thank you. And the first season that he was using Tennessee for Coach Duggs, he got to the championship and threw like 6 interceptions against Virginia Tech.
Notorious for throwing picks. He throws picks all over the place.
Dude,
Jameis Winston-esque. He is the Jameis Winston of playing. I don't know what, I forget what console he plays on, but
it's Xbox. And Xbox, the only thing, the only thing that he can do really well is run the ball.
Uh-huh.
He can't play defense, and him throwing the ball is extremely shaky, but he got a lot of help from his Barstool cronies to elevate him to championship level in year 2 with the Tennessee Volunteers. So the first national championship between Tennessee and Virginia Tech at the Rose Bowl on NCAA Football 14, I think maxed out at like 122,000 people watching on Twitch at once, which is
insane.
That is insane.
To watch a video game, watch a man play a video game.
An old NCAA football game, which a lot of people still want to get the new versions of NCAA football. And the day that happens, because I'm sure at some point down the road, it may be 10 years from now, but at some point, NCAA football is going to make its return, and it's going to be one of the pinnacle days in sports video game history. So he had 120,000 people like 2 weeks ago watching him play that national championship. Last night was the revenge game for the national championship, and he had I think he maxed out at like 160,000 people watching him as Tennessee with Coach Duggs on the sideline with Rico Bergerton as his running back.
That's a awesome football name right there, Rico Bergerton.
And he'll go in and change the names. Like JoJo Smalls was the star running back in year 1 with Tennessee. Now Rico Bergerton in year 2, and they end up winning the national championship against Miami in dramatic fashion. He scored with like 20 seconds left to win.
Instant classic.
It's pure entertainment watching him play video games. And it dawned on me recently why that is. Because I think a lot of people are either all in on watching someone play video games or they
which
have,
can be fun. It's an underrated kind of fun.
It is. Or they have zero interest at all, and they have no idea what's going on, or they have no idea why people are watching video games or somebody else play video games. But in my opinion, Elijah, this has become such a big thing because Big Cat, when he is playing as Coach Duggs in either his house all alone and he's whispering into his microphone because he's trying not to wake up the baby, or at the Barstool office in Chicago where he's got three or four different people there rooting him on and giving him tips as the game is going along.
That's when it gets fun.
He is relating himself to so many people mm-hmm. who have done just that in their lives with NCAA football. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many times growing up did you sit there and curse at the TV little things within NCAA football? Or you go in and you change names to be funny names instead of just the random names that NCAA football mm-hmm. gives you in dynasty mode. Like, he's relating so well to so many people, and he's also hilarious when he's playing these games. And his I call him his cronies.
Yeah, his squad.
He's got Hank, he's got Billy, he's got PFT Commenter, who is...
might be the funniest guy on the internet.
A huge deal
on
Twitter, if you don't know. He's also engaged to Diana Rossini. Big Cat has over a million followers on Twitter. He's a big deal in mm-hmm. the sports media world right now. And the fact that he's sitting there on a couch in what looks like a basement, dipping and playing video games, yelling profanities at the TV over mm-hmm. little things or big things within the game. That's what people are enjoying right now.
It's
because
relatable.
You can relate to that. You were in his shoes once upon a time.
Yeah, I'm 25 years old, and I'm doing a dynasty mode on my college basketball game, NCAA basketball 09, a game when I was in the eighth grade. I am playing right now to get my basketball fill in. And I have been doing a dynasty mode. I've played like four seasons in already, and I've already bounced around like doing something similar. And as a kid growing up, I did that all the time. I'd spend all nighters at my dad's house on the weekends doing dynasty modes on my PlayStation, whether it be NCAA football or Madden. And even to this day, like if one of my roommates we do Madden dynasty modes all the time. But we fantasy draft our teams. We'll just pick two teams and we'll fantasy draft them, and we'll play against each other. And then anyone who's like watching is chiming in and talking junk, and it's a lot of fun. It's incredibly relatable because that's as fun as it gets for a sports fan, really, when there's not much sports going on. It's timeless fun.
And he's also got the guys in the room yelling at him to mm-hmm. not blitz or to not adjust the player that he's operating on defense. Don't mm-hmm. go to the secondary guy, because whenever you do that,
they stop.
You give up a huge play, whereas if you just let the computer handle it, mm-hmm. he's going to make the play more times than not.
I've always hated that. And all the time.
Once he figured all that out and got all that feedback from those individuals earlier in the season that he just completed, in which he won the championship, once he figured that out, then he went on a roll. He didn't lose a game after that.
That's
after
inspiring.
He got all the advice from Hank.
Yeah, it's inspiring. He learned from his mistakes, and that is also relatable. There's an inspiring story in the rise and fall of Gus Duggerton.
Congratulations to Gus Duggerton on winning the national championship. And it has brought a thought to me of, should I try to win the Stanley Cup with the Nashville Predators next month within the return to play format on Twitch?
Ooh, that would
and
be
go
fun.
For it.
We got to stream it. We got to do it from here, and we got to stream it.
I'm a pretty good NHL player. I teamed up with Ziggs of 102.9 The Buzz last year, and we won the NHL tournament that the Predators put on. So
okay, so you got a track record.
Yes. So that would I think that would be something to consider. But
get a station Twitch account solely for this.
We should. And then utilize it more after that. But coming up next, Darren Donican Chase. We will continue the sports conversation. We will bring in Marquise Munson. And we will continue all of that coming up next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.